Welcome to the Fight Science Podcast. I am your host, Jordan Sullivan. In this series, we're continuing our journey of broadening our knowledge in the field of combat sports science by speaking to experts in the fields of nutrition science, psychology, strength and conditioning, and much more to help you become the best practitioner you can be. Today, our guest on the podcast is Paul O'Neill. Paul is a performance nutritionist from England who since 2013 is the founder of Pro Nutrition Clinic, where he consults many of the UK's most elite boxers. Paul started his own journey in boxing at just 9 years old, and as he got older and gained more experience, he became the go-to guy in the gym for nutrition advice. He quickly realized his passion lied not in the competitive ranks, but in helping his teammates navigate the confusing world of nutrition. He then went and completed further study to formally start helping fighters with their performance nutrition. Paul has been doing this for a long time, and in this episode, we get into some great discussions around how other practitioners can get a start in the field of combat sports nutrition, his biggest learnings in his own career, and where he sees the field going. This is a great episode with so much great learning, so let's get to it. All right, green light means we are live, so back for another episode of the Fight Science Podcast. Now, joined today, all the way from England, we've got Pro Nutrition Clinic owner, Mr. Paul O'Neill. Paul, thanks for coming on, mate.
It's a pleasure, mate. It's a real honor to be on. I mean, having my humble opinion against some of the top guys you have on here is a real honor.
Nah, really appreciate it. But like we were saying off air, I'm really looking forward to this chat because it's a chat that I don't really get to have on the podcast a lot. Like you said, I love talking to the researchers and the academics because you get so much good information. I feel like we get a lot of novel information on the podcast before it kind of hits the presses. But at the end of the day, you and I, we're practitioners, right? We're down in the trenches. We've got to put that information into practice. We've got to translate all of those numbers and then put that and apply it to the individual in front of us. And that's a real skill in itself, right? And that's what I'm excited to talk to you about. But before we get into all of that, Pro Nutrition Clinic, talk to us. How did it start? How did it begin? How did you even get involved in this area?
So, getting involved, it goes way back. Actually getting involved into the area started, you know, I always have this question in my mind. Did my introduction to boxing have a real influence on what I actually doing today? Because, you know, my dad walked me into a boxing gym when I was 9 or 10 years old. Back in the kind of mid-80s, tapped me on the head and said, away you go, son. And in that first session I had, unfortunately, a boxer had just died in the ring from blows to the head that he had received in the fight. So the whole talk in the gym at that time was, you know, why did he die? You know, what caused him to, was it the dehydration? Was it the dieting? Was it making weight that had these effects? And obviously being a nine-year-old in that environment, so all of your senses are proper heightened at that time. I come away thinking with all of those questions in my mind rather than, I really enjoyed the boxing. That was great. So I'm not sure if that is kind of what's led me to be where I am now. But I mean, if we fast forward to the mid 90s, I started to get involved in kind of I call it nutrition advice, but it really wasn't. So I come from a family that have always experimented with diet, whether that be for weight loss or for health reasons. And what happened is I ended up taking some of the stuff that I was seeing at home that was working for my parents and aunts and uncles and see them losing weight. And I saw the guys in the gym, and back then to make weight, the guys just used to eat less and train more. So I just started taking some of this advice and saying, oh, why don't we try this? You know, I've seen my mum diet and she seems to lose weight, but she's still eating. Why don't you try that? And I think that's where it started. And I quickly become that kind of guy that everyone come to in the gym for a bit of nutrition advice. And then, you know, that carried on for a few years. And then the actual kind of academic side didn't come till later on. When I decided, you know, this is kind of picking up momentum now. So I took, at diploma level, I took some nutrition courses to um, nutrition for weight management and sport and exercise and stuff like that. And then started Pro Nutrition Clinic nearly 10 years ago, and that's how it kind of started as a serious business, I suppose, if you like.
And are you working with all types of athletes, Paul, or are you focusing just on the combat sports guys?
I do work with the odd other athlete, but I mean, you know, 99% of the athletes are all boxers rather than just combat sport athletes in general. My main focus is just boxing, and I think that's just from my background where I was in it as a kid, all the way up till now.
Yeah, it's super interesting, right? And everyone I talk to who does this, probably not as similar as the story of that. I don't think we get that type of start where you walk into the gym and you're confronted with that at 9 years old. But we all have that experience, right, where you're in the gym and you're surrounded by it and you just look left, you look right, and you just see it everywhere. You just see terrible weight cutting. You see terrible nutrition. And we've all done it ourselves and we've all just experienced it. And that's a good introduction. Did you find that was a real driving factor, or was it a real driving factor when you started doing your nutrition studies and you came out? Was the goal, you know what, I want to help with this weight cutting, or was it, you know what, I just want to fuel these guys? Or what was your motivation to start it and really focus it towards boxers?
So yeah, the motivation really was, you know, like you say, you look around the gym and you kind of see these guys suffering a bit, and you start to give advice and they feel a little bit better through the training session, and they start to make weight whilst eating food. And back in the mid 90s, that was quite a novel idea. You know, it's, wow, I'm still eating and I'm losing weight. But I mean, for me, I've always got that nagging question in my head, you know, why are you losing weight? So what is it we're doing that is causing you to lose weight? Why can we still fuel and lose weight? And then at that time, I was kind of look around and you look at other sports and see what they're doing. And so at the time, I was looking at like wrestling and seeing what wrestlers were doing to lose a bit of weight, and seeing what jockeys were doing and seeing how they're losing weight. But kind of, you know, naively back then, you're just taking those practices and you're just moving them across to boxing and it's working. But there's always that nagging thing, is that safe? You know, so that's what led me to actually look into nutrition more, get the studies behind me. And then from there, you kind of build that base of going out and looking at the science, and saying, you know, does the science tell me why this is safe or isn't safe?
Yeah, and obviously it works and you've got a good system. So I feel like if you scroll through your Instagram, every second or third photo is just someone standing with a myriad of belts around their waist. So it's obviously working. So let's dive into that. Let's talk about your system. When someone comes to you, what are the things that you're doing with these guys? What tests are you running? And how are you compiling their nutrition plan to get them on weight?
So we start off with, the minute they come through the door, we start off with kind of a basic consultation questionnaire where we'll run through, you know, medical history, you know, food likes and dislikes, any intolerances they think they may have. And then we'll do some body composition work. I use the body metrics in-body scanner, not in-body, the body metrics ultrasound scanner. It's a lot like calipers, but my practice with calipers is way off. You know, I can test the same guy twice straight after each other and get a different result. And I found with the ultrasound scanner, I get a much more consistent reading. So yeah, we do the body composition measurements, and then we, you know, depending on the level of the athlete and what the athlete's trying to achieve, we then go on to some RMR testing with the metabolic cart, and then some VO2 max testing, and see where their substrate use is and stuff like that through exercise. And then we put them from all of that information, we put together the plan. And it's, you know, it's my plan is, you know, I've got no problems in saying I'm standing on the shoulder of some giants in the industry and just shouting out their message. So, you know, I use like from Cole's paper back in 2011, the Making Weight in Combat Sports, you know, I use a lot of the principles from that. And we come up with, the, you know, I suppose what's considered in our industry now is the classic you know, weight making protocol. So we do like a four phase process. We look at fat loss up until fat loss, if we can, you know, up until fight week. And then we've got the acute weight loss strategies for fight week. And then obviously the weigh-in day strategies, and then the rehydration refuel after that.
Yeah, brilliant. And I want to get into this a bit more, Paul. And I apologize if I'm diverging from any topics we discussed beforehand, but I want to talk to you about it because boxing is such an interesting sport in that there are more weight classes, right? And there's the big elephant in the room whenever you have this conversation is weight cutting and the dangers around weight cutting. MMA is a different situation because the gaps between the weight classes are pretty ginormous and it creates inherent problems, right? Do you find that the extra weight classes in boxers, does that allow you to avoid these, or are boxers just thinking, oh, you know what, like these weight classes are closer, so I can just skip a couple extra down? Or from all your experience, what's it like in that boxing world with all of this weight cut culture?
It still presents a massive problem, I feel. Although the weight classes are closer together, I still think the mentality of 90% of fighters is that they want to lose as much weight as possible because they think they're getting an advantage in the ring. I suppose in a way it's trying to break that culture slightly. I don't think weight making is going to go away anytime soon. So it's just trying to change that. And I think that there's kind of two things with the UFC, good and bad. I think a lot of boxers look at the UFC weight cuts and think, well, you know, if they can do it, then there's no reason we shouldn't be able to do it. But, you know, that's on a very simplistic level. Obviously, they miss out the whole gap in the weight classes in the UFC is a lot bigger than in boxing. And also the guys are, you know, for a lot of the time are in wrestling matches, a lot of grappling matches where the weight advantage does play a big part. Whereas in the striking sports, it doesn't need to be that big. So I think it is a problem in boxing because I do think the mentality of a lot of people is to just lose as much weight as possible. And I don't think the weight classes make a huge difference, if I'm honest.
How do you go about with your clients educating them on that? How do you go about sitting them down and taking, say, a young kid that's gone through a system, probably had a coach very similar to what you and I had and we're talking about before, probably pretty old school, and they've always done it, always made weight the same way. How do you go about taking that young kid and changing that perspective and changing their opinion on that and saying, hey, maybe it doesn't give you that advantage?
Yeah, it can be a really tricky process. It can be really hard. I think the relationship you build up with the athlete is massive. And I think that comes over time. I think you have to take small steps to start with. You need to implement a few changes to them through kind of out of camp and then see how that goes for them, like in sparring sessions and just see. I think once you start getting that initial buy-in, I think it's easy for them to start trusting you as you go along. And you need that trust, especially once you get into the, you know, once you get, you know, once you go to the well in fight camp and you're really making weight, especially in that last week when your athlete's, you know, it feels like he's out on his feet, you know, he can have no energy and, you know, you're really drawing back the calories, you're really periodizing the carbohydrate intake, so their energy is really low. Having that athlete buy-in is really important. Because you need that trust for them, you know, for them to stick to the plan.
What type of processes are you using to get that buy-in? Is it just, hey, you know what, you've got to kind of suck it up and say, I need these guys to just trust me for once and I'll show them and I'll prove it to them that it works. And then I know after that one time it'll happen. Or are there other strategies that you're using, or are you strategically using other guys in the gym and kind of using them as poster boys to put in front of other prospective clients? Or what's your strategy there?
Yeah, I think you get that a lot. I think you get that a lot in the combat sports world. I think if you have a result with one guy in the gym, that quickly filters around that gym. And you do get kind of instant buy-in from other guys that are just coming on board. But I mean, to start with, you can... You do things like So you'll run through their what their strategy is normally for an intense training session, whether that be sparring or, you know, some high intensity efforts. And just being really on top of how they're fueling that going into the gym, can get that immediate buy-in. So, you know, if you just load them up with some carbohydrates going into a heavy sparring session, and they do 6 or 8 rounds and come out and they say to you, well, you know, I feel fantastic. You know, normally I'm, you know, I can do 4 rounds and I start to really feel it. Just getting that instant buy-in and explain what's going on, try and simplify some of the science down to how their body's reacting, how they're using the fuels and that kind of stuff, gets that buy-in from them straight away. And then they just start to trust the process as they go into camp and through camp.
And are you finding with these guys, are they coming back and are they getting better each camp? Are there improvements that you can get with them? Or is it always just kind of, okay, you've come back into camp, we've got your numbers, let's just rinse and repeat? Or are you kind of looking, hey, let's add this in and that in? Or how do you play that?
Yeah, it's a tough one, because I think a lot of boxers, well, they come to me, and I'm assuming it's the same across the industry. They come to you, and you become this just kind of weight making expert, that you're really only there just for them to make weight, which really is only half the story. I mean, for me, I consider myself a kind of performance nutritionist. I actually want to fuel these guys to perform better and not just, you know, have less concentration on just making weight. So it's getting that balance of performance and making weight at the same time.
How we translate this research into practice, and it's a big topic, right? And like I said, we've had so many great researchers, academics on this podcast, and so much good information, but it's a whole different story. It's a whole different story when you take all that and you've got a young person, a young athlete in front of you, and you've got to put all that into practice and you've got to do all this. If you're trying to take all that information, you're saying, I want you to be the best performance athlete as you can be. How are you delivering this info? Okay. Are you giving them, hey, you need to eat this many calories, you need to be doing these macros? Are you taking all that stress away, giving them a meal plan? How are you translating all of that and giving this in a nice little package for the athlete that's sitting in front of you?
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, for an out and out practitioner, relating the actual science that's going on back into practice is probably one of the most hardest things. And I mean, your podcast is the leader for this kind of thing. And there are some other great podcasts out there that, you know, I mean, I know James Morton's just done one where he's done his From Paper to Podium podcast, which is these great researchers in the likes of, you know, Carl Langenhams. I know Mark Germain is great at taking the research and putting it out there. The same as your podcast, Jordan, is fantastic of actually taking the science. And you need these crossover academics that are actually deeply into the science and understand the practice, because it's those guys that are helping kind of pure practitioners like me, if you like, take this information and relaying it to the athlete. Like I said, I'm really standing on the shoulders of some of you great guys and just shouting out the message that you're saying. So for me, I'm taking, like I said before, I use Cole's paper from, I think it was 2011, and I take the calories. We calculate the deficit these guys need to be in, and then I'm using the 3-2-1, you know, carbs, protein, and fats. I'm putting that into their program, periodizing the carbohydrates around their training intensity, so they get some. I want some sessions low carbohydrates, so we get those training adaptations we need, and then some sessions we're going really high carb, so they're sparring as best they can. Getting the most out of those high intensity sessions. And then I've really, depending on what the athlete wants, I've got kind of two models of how we relay all of that information. It's in meal plan form, where they, you know, I can prescribe what they need, and then they go off and their poor wives or their girlfriends get the cooking list and they have to go for it. Or I'm lucky enough to partner with a great meal prep company here in the UK called Fuel Hub, that, you know, they do meals for me. They do tailored meals for the athletes. So I'm really lucky in that regard that I've got them to fall back on if the athletes just want that convenience of having the meals there.
You're spot on, hey, with you've got to do it with how the athlete in front of you is presenting, right? I had this meeting with our team the other day, and we have three models on which we use, and one of the younger guys was saying, well, why do you use this one? And it's exactly that. And you got to say, because some of these guys love the numbers. They love and they're fascinated and they're fixated on the numbers, and you've got to cater for that. And then other guys, they'll just say, well, what am I paying you for? Like, I don't want to have to do all this. What am I paying you for? Just give me the meal in a box and I'll eat it and then go away. So you really do have to cater for that. Let's talk about the fight week, because fight camp and outside of camp is one story, I think. And there's some very good principles and very good research that we can lean on. And we can say, you know what? If we want to lose this weight, we know you got to be in a calorie deficit. If you want to be performing, we know you need carbohydrates. It's basic bioenergetics. We know all these principles. Even in the research, when it comes to fight week, I wouldn't even say it's a gray area. I would say it's the murkiest shade of gray, whatever that color is. That's what it is when it comes to the fight week. And no matter what, even in the research, because it's so difficult to do the research in that area for ethical reasons, practitioners like us are often left in the dark, I feel. And this is an area I'm very passionate about, especially as the field grows and younger practitioners are coming in and they might be reading all of these research papers or even looking at the works of people like yourself, where it's very clearly outlined in, say, the fight camp and the out of camp period. When it comes to this fight week, this is really the business end of it. This is the high end, the high risk end of it. This is where if you don't get it right, you could do some serious damage to these guys. What's your approach with your boxers when it comes to fight week? And how has that changed over the many, many years that you've done this with these guys?
Yeah, I mean, it is. It can be a frightening process, fight week. And new practitioners coming in, I think, need to understand that it's not something you can just prescribe and then take a back seat and just let the athlete, you know, roll through fight week. I think you really do need to be on top of the athlete, daily communication, in-person communication, especially once you get to the cutting edge on weighing day and stuff like that. So for me, my numbers going into fight week are quite conservative. I go kind of 3% body, 3% from fight weight as a small cut, 6% for a medium cut. And then I say anything from 8%, I consider to be a large cut. So, I mean, I know in the mixed martial arts world, those numbers are probably conservative, but for me, they're what I like to work towards. And then through fight week, you know, I'm doing the classic, the classic protocols that I suppose we all use. The low fiber, low residue, we can manipulate muscle glycogen if we've got that 36 hour weigh-in period. And then we're leaving the water weight to right at the last minute. But again, it's all about knowing the athlete, seeing how they react through fight week. You know, some guys present very differently at the start of fight week than others. So it's knowing, it's actually building up that relationship with the fighter. And the longer that relationship goes on, the more benefit for him and you, really, because you really get to understand how his body reacts through fight week. And you know, how much weight he's going to drop once you start drawing back the fiber, and how much weight he can sweat out, you know, once we come to that weigh-in period.
And what are some of the techniques and tactics that you're using for that final weight cut and that last sweat? Because I know this is an area a lot of people don't like talking about it. A lot of people kind of just shy away from it and they go, you know what, I don't want to touch it. But the fact of the matter is, the reality is that guys like you and me, we're the practitioners. We've been looking after these guys. We're liable. We're the guys that are liable for their health and safety. We have to talk about it. We have to guide them through it. What are you doing when it comes to that aspect of this process?
Yeah, I think that's a big problem. I think as a community, you know, whether that be commissions, governing bodies, practitioners like me and you, the athletes, there needs to be more, a lot more communication on the, actually what's going on around fight week. Because like you say, it is a very, it still feels like a very taboo subject. And it shouldn't be. I think we should all just put our hands up and say this, you know, this is what's going on. This is the science we've got, whether it be very limited, you know, we've got, you know, understanding like things like water loading, like we've got, obviously we've got reads researching water loading, but like you say, it's very thin on the ground. So in terms of tactics on reducing the weight, I'm doing like the low fiber, low residue, muscle glycogen. And then as we get towards fight camp, we're doing that, you know, acute water cut, where we're looking at things like, depending on the athlete's preference, really, some active sweat out sessions, the sauna or the bath and that kind of stuff. But obviously while you're doing all those, it is monitoring the athlete's well-being while you're doing that, you know, keeping an eye on blood oxygen levels, getting the strap on the arm for blood pressure and that kind of stuff. I think all of these things, this is one of the big difference from when I started till now, is that you wasn't doing any of these things, you know. You were chucking the guy in the bath with a sweatsuit on, you know, chucking the guy in the sauna with a sweatsuit on, or put him in a hot bath, not really knowing, you know, what's going on inside the body, what you should really be monitoring. And, you know, they're feeling a little bit dizzy and you're just kind of winging it to get them through. But, you know, now we're understanding a lot more what's going on. We can put things in place to monitor their well-being as that cut goes on. And that's really important. And I think that's really important for new practitioners that are just coming into the field, is you can't just put these practices, you know, onto the athlete and expect them to sail through it. You know, there's going to be times where, you know, guys get in the bath for 5 minutes and they just can't hack it. You know, they get out and you've still got a few pounds to come off. But the athlete's, you know, has hit that mental block and he's saying, that's it, I'm done, I can't do no more. You know, it's all about reassuring the athlete, you know, you are monitoring their, you know, you've got these, albeit limited, things that you're monitoring with blood pressure. You know, I'm just looking into the heart strap monitor with the ECG unit in, so you can get that on and just you can look at what their heart's doing through the ECG readouts. And it's just monitoring those, reassuring the athlete and getting through it. And that's what new practitioners need to understand, that it's all well and good. I mean, like you say, you go through my Instagram and you see me standing there with a guy with a belt around his waist, that, you know, that's the 0.5% of the job. You know, the rest of it, when you're in the, you know, when you're in the trenches through that fight week, you know, I don't think new practitioners particularly see that. But like you say, like we've said, the more we hold our hands up and say, look, this is what goes on. This is how weight cutting is at the minute in combat sports. And I think a lot more new practitioners will understand what's going on.
And further to that, Paul, what would be your suggestion, given all of your experience and hands-on and being in there in the trenches and seeing that and understanding that? Like you said, it's not just you just put them in a bath or a sauna. There's so many levels to that procedure. In those few hours that you're in there, there's so many physiological factors that you're monitoring. There's so many psychological cues that you're looking out for. And you're the master and the pilot of the plane, aren't you? You're controlling all of these things. And there's really, I describe it, it's one of the most high pressure situations I think someone in our industry can be on in any sport. Like I've never heard of an athlete missing a game winning three in a basketball game and them going, oh my God, the nutritionist stuffed up. Never. Like there's no one in a soccer game when they miss the final penalty, they point at the nutritionist, go, you didn't give him his carbs at halftime. It's never. But when someone goes into weigh-ins and say someone looks in bad shape, or, you know, God forbid something terrible happens, all eyes are on us. And like you said, it's something that we just don't talk about. It's something that is just almost this taboo area where no one really wants to touch it. And what I want to ask you is, why do you think that is? Do you think that this is a shift of responsibility? Do people appreciate that, you know what, there is a big risk, and maybe the sports docs, they don't want to take that, or maybe the coaches don't want to take on that? Why is it that it is like this? Why is it this taboo area? And why can't we just openly talk about it and then make progress on it?
Yeah, it's you're right. We shoulder a huge amount of responsibility, you know, and in some instances, rightly so. You know, I mean, you can, if you look at some of the sports like the Tour de France, you know, the guys there, you can point at the nutritionist and say, you know, he's the decision maker on winning or losing for the team. And rightly so, you know, these guys, you know, are highly trained professionals. They put a lot into the sport. I think the trouble we've got in combat sports is that we're in this real extreme area for nutrition. I mean, if you take some of our practices and put them in front of like a medical practitioner, that they pull their hair out and say, you know, you can't do this kind of stuff. It's ridiculous. And I think that's where the gulf has come from between old school boxing coaches and that you've got the kind of medical practitioners as such, and the gulf between those two is so wide. I think that's where a lot of the taboo, you know, like this is a taboo subject. I think that's where that comes from, because of the gulf. And I think what we're doing as practitioners in this very unique field is just trying to bring those two extremes closer together. So trying to still make, you know, look at from the medical practitioner side, trying to still make weight making as safe as possible, and taking some of the old school methods where we don't really understand, you know, why it's working, but we know it's working, so we're just going to keep doing it and bringing that closer to the medical side, and hopefully finding that sweet spot in the middle.
I'm going to keep this train running, Paul, only because this field is rapidly growing, you would know. And I would say every week I get at least half a dozen to a dozen student messages saying, hey, I want to do what you do. And I always have that same thought. I think it's so great that so many people are wanting to get into this field. I just don't know if we have the infrastructure to train these guys and put these guys in this situation where they could handle that, or where they can even receive the education that they need. And that's my next question to you is, what do you think we need to do? What do you think we need to do as an industry, as a community, as a field of sports nutrition? And I would consider combat sports nutrition a field of sports nutrition nowadays. What do you think we need to do to ensure that these new guys that are coming through, that are very excited about it, they want to do a lot of good, how do we make sure that they're equipped and knowledgeable enough to do that?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think we're at the start of a very exciting phase in terms of combat sport nutrition, whereas the science in the sport over the last 5 years has really started to accelerate. And I hope that continues, and we find, you know, new methods of research that can actually get us closer to combat sports. Because it's the research that then sparks the education, and you know, there are some great guys out there. You know, we're lucky in the UK to have all the guys out at Liverpool, John Moores, who are quite involved with combat sports research. And I think that's where it starts. I think it's getting that good quality research that is actually focused on combat sports. And then building that into some kind of educational platform. Because I'm the same. I have undergrads kind of contact me sometimes and say, look, how can I jump on for some work experience? And it's like, in this industry, sometimes I feel like I'm a work experience every day, still trying to figure out what's going on. And like you say, it's hard. Where do you put these guys to kind of start off their education? It's a good question. It's really hard. And I think that starts with the universities actually realizing that this isn't a taboo subject. You know, and start them that way, actually having those individual courses that are designed at combat sports nutrition.
And I don't want to bash on anyone here, Paul, because I think anyone that's going out and looking for education, that's trying to put themselves in a better position, I commend them and I do that. But especially in the combat sports world, like I've done a couple of them, like many moons ago, looked at, you know, these short courses trying to do combat sports nutrition. And something that I learned from poking around, and we don't need to mention names, but poking around these courses, is that I remember thinking, like, wow, like at the time I had 2 degrees and I was just thinking, this is what they're teaching these people. They're going out and then they're being qualified, quote unquote, to be work with these guys. And then being in the field, that was my immediate thought. And that was a lot of the motivation behind me starting TFD was, wow, that cannot be the standard. That cannot be what we're doing and sending people out, because this is a dangerous thing, and it can be. And unfortunately, we've seen it. We've seen that. We've had wrestlers die. In Australia, we've unfortunately had a teenage girl die. We had a girl in Australia hospitalized, emergency surgery last year after a botched weight cut. It's a dangerous, dangerous thing. What would be your advice if these students were looking around and say they are messaging you, or they're looking for people and they're going, I just want to learn, but I don't know like what's credible. I don't know what's what. I don't know where this information is. There's not even no one at my university. There's not even a lecturer who even knows what weight cutting is. What do I do, Paul? I want to do it, but I just don't know where to look. Where do they look to get that info?
Yeah, it is worrying. Some of the practices you see from these, you know, and with these Instagram tags as, you know, weight cutting specialists and that kind of stuff, it is concerning, because at the end of the day, it puts a mar on the whole industry, and it makes guys like, you know, me and you are trying to do a good job, it ends up making the whole industry look bad. And you know, there are some really good resources out there. I mean, you know, we've just had the UFCPI release their latest journal. It's got a fantastic section on nutrition in there. You've obviously got some of the you've got Reed Real's book, who goes, you know, so, you know, and in terms of some of the nutrition in there, you know, you could look at it and say the nutrition side of it is really basic, but what you're trying to get from it is how all of this relates to the whole cycle of fight camp and cutting weight and that kind of stuff. You've got some other good resource, Danny Lennon's Sigma Nutrition, you know, is another great resource. And then obviously it's trying to find those researchers out there that are one, that are involved in practice. So they actually know how the research relates to practice, because sometimes not all of it does. And then finding those universities that are actually willing to get research in the field of combat sports. I mean, for us, you know, Liverpool John Moores is just a prime example of that. And it's kind of taking these new guys and saying, look, I don't know, you know, I'm lucky enough that I've, you know, I've done the 9 yards, you know, I've been in it a long time, and I'm one, I'll hold my hands up and say, in the early days, I made some dreadful mistakes and ones I'd never want to make again. And, you know, I suppose in a way I was lucky that none of my athletes come out with any real detrimental effects from that. But that was a learning experience. And then from that, that's what sparks my curiosity, is, you know, okay, I need to make this better. If I'm serious about this, I want to do a good job, then, you know, my thirst for knowledge needs to be better. And then that's when you go out and you seek all these different resources. So I would say to new practitioners is do just that. You know, read through the UFCPI's nutrition section, read it, you know, 10 times and see what questions you come up with. You know, look at Reed Real's stuff, look at Liverpool John Moores, you know, look, you know, see what Carl Langer Evans is doing, look at Mark Germain's stuff, look at James Morton's stuff from the university, and really just spend, you know, 6 months a year, and I know it sounds like a long time, but spend that amount of time just reading it, rereading it, trying to apply it to some gym type sessions, and then kind of and then find your feet from there.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great advice. And I guess there's a bit of doom and gloom in there. And I don't want, if you're a young student or if you're a practitioner wanting to get into this field, I don't want you to take from this me and Paul saying, run, go away, there's nothing there, because it's absolutely not. We need more people as the sport is growing in all combat sports, boxing, MMA, judo, all these different sports. Jiu-jitsu is just rocketing. We need practitioners. There's a couple more questions I want to ask you, Paul, but just to finish off this little section, how would you describe working? If this a student athlete or a student practitioner came up to you, and let's say we're at a fair where all the students go, I don't know what they call it in England, where all the universities put up tents, and me and you are representing the combat sports industry, and then we've got students that come up to us and they go, hey, why should I work in that industry? What would you say?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't mean to paint I didn't mean to paint like a dark and gloomy side of it. I mean, this is we need new practitioners in this industry. You know, there's a guy out there probably at university right now that is the next poster boy of combat sports nutrition. And we need that. I think we need that to raise the level of combat sports nutrition. I'm a boxer through and through. You know, I started as a young kid and I've never really looked back. So being involved in this sport day in and day out is like a dream come true. Just being around gyms and athletes, is especially high level athletes, is really something to behold. You know, watching them perform in the gym day in and day out, and then actually seeing them in competition. And like you said, when things go wrong for that athlete in terms of making weight, you know, the finger is pointed at the nutritionist. But equally so, that sense of achievement when you've had an athlete with a good weight cut, he's made weight, he feels strong, he goes in and he performs, you know, depending on what that looks like for that athlete, when he performs well and he wins, the adulation that you get from that is second to none. It really is.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And it's so good, hey, like, and I found that in my practice, I'm sure you're the same, is that there's nothing more rewarding when you take someone where that's probably their biggest issue. Their biggest issue is making weight, and that's what's holding them back from a limitless career where their potential, there's no ceiling on their potential. It's just the scale. And then where you can be that person that can remove that and kind of let them go and explore that potential, it's a really empowering and really, really cool feeling. And I've never really felt that in any other job that I've ever had in nutrition. And I think that's such a cool and empowering thing. And like you said, there probably is that kid or a couple of other guys or girls at university right now that are those people that are going to do that for the next big star, the next Conor McGregor, the next Israel Adesanya, the next Tyson Fury. They're sitting in university seats and they're going to be that person for the next superstar.
Exactly that, yeah.
Yeah, mate. The last one that I want to ask you, Paul, before I take up too much of your time, we're talking about a lot of other people's books. And I want you to give us the elevator pitch on what is quite possibly the most important thing when it comes to nutrition that is not nutrition. You have a book out called Sleep Like an Athlete. Tell us about it. If you can give us, without giving us all the information, because I want people, if you're listening, to go buy this book because it's very, very, very important. Give us it. Why did you write this book and why is it so important for athletes to read it?
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm sure you've found in practice you're ticking every box, you know, the calories are on point, performance is on point. You know, there isn't anything in front of you that's saying this athlete shouldn't be performing well or shouldn't be losing weight if we're trying to make a weight. But yet the numbers are not budging on the scales. You're checking these guys regularly and something's wrong. And you come away and you're sitting at home scratching your head, wondering what, you know, everything's right. I don't understand. You know, you've put all of your experience, all of the knowledge you've got, you've put it all into practice and nothing's happening. And then, you know, you'll be in the gym one day and the athlete says, you know, the kids are having a rough time. They've kept me up, you know, they've kept me up every night for the last week. I'm just not sleeping well. I've had, you know, I had 2 hours last night, 3 hours the night before. And that's when the penny drops, that, you know, the problems you're seeing in terms of making weight is all comes down to sleep. And I've found that just putting in some really simple practices around, some good sleep hygiene, regular routine and stuff like that, have really brought these athletes on in terms of performance and making weight. So I put that short book together that's just got five principles in there that go through how we develop good sleep hygiene. It's simple things like, cutting your caffeine out, stopping the blue light late on in the evening, regular sleep and wake times. It's simple stuff that you can implement immediately into your week, and it really does improve your sleep hygiene. And then what we get from that is just, tenfold improvements. There's some great quotes out there from Usain Bolt, Roger Federer. These guys are at the top of their game in their respective sports, and they all put a huge importance on sleep, and that's for a reason. So, the book's got some good practical things that you can put into practice, and also backed up with a little bit of research in there as well that just explains why sleep's important and why it works.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And where can, if people are listening and they want to get their hands on this, where can they purchase this book?
If you, at the minute, it's actually on a free download on my website. So if you go over to pronutritionclinic.com, it's on the homepage there. Scroll down and you can download it there for free.
Oh, there you go. Now you have absolutely no excuse if you're listening to this to not go there and download it, not even a paywall behind it. And there probably should be a paywall with that information. But Paul and Neil, I won't take up any more of your time. I really appreciate that. That's such an awesome episode. I've wanted to have a chat like that with another practitioner for a long time, because I do feel this field, it's growing. And that's such a cool thing. It's so exciting. There's so many more athletes. But I do kind of always get this sense that, you know what, it's growing, but do we have the infrastructure to support that growth? Do we have all these things set up that, yes, when these practitioners are coming through, we're fully equipping them to be able to do this as safely as possible? So it's very awesome to get your insights of that. I really appreciate it. Paul, if people are listening to this and they go, you know what, I want to listen to Paul a bit more and I want to get in contact with him, what's the best way for him to do that?
I'm on all the socials. So I'm on Instagram as Pro Nutrition Clinic. I'm on Twitter, but I can't get into Twitter. It's a crazy world. So I'm on there. I'm on Facebook, places like that, all under Pro Nutrition Clinic. Or you can hit me up on the website, pronutritionclinic.com, or shoot me an email, paulo'neill@pronutritionclinic.com. I'll talk all day about this stuff because I'm passionate about it. I've got a thirst for learning for more information. So I love conversations about it. So yeah, anyone who wants to hit me up can find me on any of those channels.
Awesome. That's awesome, mate. Now, I guess very last question I want to ask you, Tyson Fury, who's he fighting next?
Tough one. I think next, if he wants to fight, that is. I think he will. I actually think he will end up fighting Alexander Usyk.
And what is Paul O'Neill's Pro Nutrition Clinic? What is your prediction? This could be the biggest soundbite in the combat sports nutrition world.
I think Tyson Fury stops him inside 7.
Yeah, heard it here first. All right, I'm not going to make comment because I'm not that confident in my predictions. But Paul O'Neill, thank you so much for coming on, mate. We'll no doubt do it again soon.
It's been an absolute pleasure, Jordan. Thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it.
And there it is, another episode of the Fight Science Podcast. There are some great learnings and lessons from one of the UK's most experienced practitioners. I encourage you to follow Paul on socials and check out his website, pronutritionclinic.com, to stay up to date with what he is doing. This podcast will be available through the podcast app, iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, and you'll also be able to download it from my website, www.thefightdietitian.com/podcast. If you enjoy listening to the podcast, then be sure to head to the podcast app, give us a rating, leave us a review. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you guys for the next episode of the Fight Science Podcast.